Welcome to Powering Through Life on the Divas That Care Network. I'm your host, Teresa Sims, and I'm a life coach, NLP practitioner, and multiple award-winning author and number one best-selling co-author. Each week on Powering Through Life, my guests and I discuss a special topic that's close to their hearts. Together, we will explore the challenges they have faced in life and learn what strategies and tools they have used to power through their lives. Now, today my guest is Tanya McIntyre, and I'm really going to enjoy this one because Tanya's topic today is being positive in a negative world. And Tanya McIntyre was part of mainstream media for 22 years, but packed up negative news to create an online resource for people to watch, read, and hear good things to feel good. Tanya's mission is to educate people to be conscious of consuming media that supports their health and well-being. Tanya, welcome to Powering Through Life.
Thank you, Teresa. It's so awesome to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad we're getting to do this finally. We've been wanting to do this for a while, and finally our schedule's coordinated, and here we go. I'm so excited to share this wonderful topic with our listeners.
As am I, Teresa. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Oh, you're very welcome. So let's just dive right into this. So Tanya, what have you learned so far that's made you or made the biggest difference in your life?
Oh my gosh. So I think there are a lot of things that have made huge differences in my life. But I think one thing that kind of comes to mind is that I'm a real wordsmith. So when I was going through school, I struggled in things like math and science and all of that, but I embraced literature and grammar and English. And I've learned over the years that the words we use create our thoughts, and the thoughts are actually creating our, what I call vibrations, our energy. You know, I think we learned from Albert Einstein that our world is energy. Everything is energy. Energy is everything. So we literally create our life with our words, our thoughts, our actions. So the sooner we can learn, well, for me, the sooner I learned to be the gatekeeper of my mind, to master our mind, I think that's when things really started to come together for me. Because I think, you know, the programming starts in our life literally from infancy, right? We're told that we're never good enough. We're getting these messages from mainstream media and advertising telling us that we're inferior until we go out and buy something or take something to feel better. You know, we're now living in an era where we have an epidemic of cosmetic surgery happening, primarily among women, because women are told that they're inferior. You need to weigh a certain number on a scale. You need to fit into a certain size of clothing. You need to, you know, have specific kinds of skin, a certain color hair. You can't have hair here, but it's okay to have it there. We're just getting, you know, bombarded with messages. So I think, and I encourage everyone to be the gatekeeper of your mind. You know, I have this little shtick that I made rhyme because I want you to hear my voice in your head. Would you like to hear it?
Absolutely.
Take the diet that really works, a media fast. Don't watch, read, or listen to news and feel how much your life improves.
I love that. And I know you have something else that's called the FUD factor. Would you like to share that as well?
Oh, my gosh, yes. Well, the FUD factor, being part of mainstream media as a broadcast journalist for 22 years, I started to realize that mainstream media has an agenda. And that agenda is to perpetuate what I like to call the FUD factor, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Mm-hmm. Because when we are frozen in this FUD factor, then, you know, we're more likely to go out and buy stuff that we don't need. I mean, we're now considered to be the most stressed, depressed, overweight, over-medicated population in history. And I think there's a direct correlation to this FUD factor from mainstream media and advertising messages telling us that we're never good enough until we go out and buy something or take something to feel better. And this correlation to this, you know, this epidemic that we have of stress in our lives.
No, I think there's a lot to be said for that, Tanya. And, you know, talking about how our world and we are energy, you know, I think, you know, you're talking about how the negativity and the stories that we're told when we're young, that goes into our subconscious. And that's where our habits and long-lasting programming is. And I think, you know, these negative images are, I think they get buried in there too. And I think that's where we need to start changing things, is by going into our, into who we are and into our subconscious minds and eliminating the things that are not serving a good purpose for us at all.
I totally agree. You know, and it translates into different areas of our life as well, right? I mean, you know, starting from, literally, it starts from our birth, because if you're born a girl, then your life takes a certain path, right? You're expected to play with dolls. You're expected to be demure, you know, nice and proper. Now, if you're a boy, on the other hand, you're expected to play with guns, be strong and aggressive.
Yes,
and then,
and
that's
not show emotion either. Yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, boys don't cry, right? How often do little boys hear that? It's terrible. And then we're programmed by our parents and our teachers and our friends to keep that status quo of social norms and expectations, right? And then we're confined by those social constructs. And then if girls dare to display any masculine traits, they're criticized. And then the same for boys. If they display any feminine traits, they're criticized.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's never going to be any scarcity of criticism throughout our lives.
Very true.
So
the news is just littered with everything. I mean, if they started to show something positive once in a while, that would be nice change, wouldn't it?
Well, and when I suggest, Teresa, that people take a media fast and not watch, read, or listen to news, they say, well, that's a bit extreme. I need to stay informed. And I said, what do you need to stay informed about? What's so important that you need to stay informed about? Do you think if there's not something relevant to your life that someone who cares about you is not going to tell you? I mean, you know, if the world is ending, someone who loves you will tell you. Otherwise, what relevance to your life does the news have except to make you depressed and angry and hope less?
Mm-hmm. I would totally agree
with
that.
Right? I mean, so when you take a media, and I love to quote Denzel Washington on this, because, you know, people love to take the advice of celebrities, right? All the fashion trends and pretty much everything starts from someone in Hollywood doing it first.
Right.
case in point, I guess, of recent days would be the cleansing diet. Everybody I know is on a cleansing diet. We could have another show about that another time.
We can.
I actually had an interview canceled by someone when we were talking about Weight Watchers, and she had said something. She said, oh, you know, your philosophies remind me a lot of Oprah Winfrey. And I said, oh, thank you. You know, I said, a few years ago, I probably would have considered that a compliment, but now not so much. She said, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, the whole Weight Watcher debacle. And she said, what's wrong with Weight Watchers? I said, it sends the wrong message to women.
Mm.
And she said, I love Weight Watchers. I said, what do you love about Weight Watchers? She said, well, it's camaraderie. And I said, well, there are lots of places you can go for camaraderie that is going to give you a more positive message about your body and your overall health and what you need to do to maintain that health.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, Weight Watchers is telling you you need to reach a certain number before you can be validated in their program, and you need to spend a fortune on their food.
Yes. It is all about numbers.
That's the wrong message.
Yeah.
It is all about numbers, and it's unnecessary, and it's the wrong message. And I lost a lot of respect for Oprah Winfrey over that whole investment debacle. So she canceled the interview. She said, you're not going to be very popular with an opinion like that. And I said, well, I'm not running a popularity contest. I'm trying to encourage women to embrace themselves for all that they are today, because that's all we have is today.
That's fantastic, Tanya. That is so powerful. And I think that there's a lot of truth in that, you know, because a lot of us will never be a size 10. I don't remember when I was a size 10, to be honest with you. And you know what? It's just not maybe in my DNA that I can get to that size 10, and I'm okay with who I am as long as I'm healthy and I'm exercising and I'm doing what's best for me.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what size clothes you have. It really doesn't. It doesn't matter what the number on the scale says. It's how you feel. And that's why it's I gravitate toward women. There's a woman in London, Ontario now, who's actually catering to this market that's totally overlooked. Our average size now for women is about a 14. I think it's even higher than that. Mm-hmm. But they are grossly underserviced in the fashion industry. And, you know, she has been a voluptuous woman all of her life. And she couldn't find clothing to fit her and make her feel good. So she decided she loved designing and sewing. So she has a company in London, and she is doing very well because there's a huge market of women who need clothing that they feel good in.
That's fantastic. And I do think I know who that woman is that you're speaking about. And I have just looked her up on the internet recently. And it's very fascinating. What a great market. And there are a lot of women that will need that type of clothing. Because,
absolutely.
You know, when you think about it.
Close to home for us, right? In London.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I heard once upon a time that Marilyn Monroe, the sex symbol of all, you know, the world, was actually a size 14.
Yes, she was, and voluptuous, right?
I mean,
and then, the whole, we'll do it, again, we're getting off topic, Teresa, because, you know, I could talk about the hairlessness fad that we're on with Brazilian waxes and stuff for women. It's like, oh my goodness, don't get me going.
That's another topic for another show.
That's another topic.
Yes, exactly. So, Tanya, what have you learned about being a wordsmith? How has that changed you, transformed you, helped you in your life, in your career?
Well, it certainly helped me in my career as a journalist. But, you know, I think like anyone, when you're 18, considering what you want to do, when I was 18, I was struggling to get through school. You know, I barely just graduated high school. I didn't really know what I wanted to do, except I loved, I was a news junkie at that time. I listened to the Canadian Broadcasting Company, CBC. I was just, you know, always listening to news from around the world.
Yeah.
And I thought I would just love to travel around the world and cover global events as a journalist. And at that, I think they were called then, at that point, foreign correspondents.
Yes.
And I went into my guidance counselor at the Catholic high school I attended and told her, I said, I'd love to be a journalist, a foreign correspondent. How do I go about that? And she said, oh, no, dear, that's no vocation for a lady. So that one sentence derailed that dream for a while. And I thought, well, all of my other girlfriends were going on to university to take an arts degree, which I just felt was a continuation of high school, which I didn't do well in. So why would I go and spend money to continue on something that I wasn't good at?
Right.
And when you're not academically inclined, you're made to feel stupid by mainstream education. And I knew I wasn't stupid, but I didn't fit into that academic, that life. And I just couldn't envision me going on to university to take something where I didn't really even know what I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up taking the few hundred dollars I got for graduation, and I bought a one-way ticket, a train ticket, because I've always wanted to see Canada from coast to coast, and I lived in Nova Scotia at the time. So I bought a one-way ticket from Sydney, Nova Scotia, to Vancouver, British Columbia.
Wow.
And I saw the coast by Via Rail. It was one of the most magnificent trips of my life. And when I got to Vancouver, I was so naive, Teresa. I was just so naive. I was just turned 18. And I got into the cab and I said, take me to an apartment hotel near the water. And this taxi driver, I guess he thought I was a prostitute, a hooker.
Oh.
Because that's apparently... I know. I had no idea. So I get to this apartment hotel, the English Bay Apartment Hotel in Vancouver, beautiful spot, I thought at the time. And this little guy, takes me up to this tiny little room with a little fridge and a little stove and a window that looked out onto the brick wall of the building next door. And I thought I had arrived in heaven. So I start looking through the newspaper at the want ads, and the only talent I had at that point, Teresa, was typing. I had taken a typing course in grade 12.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I knew I was a good administrator because I helped run my father's real estate business. So I started looking for admin typing jobs. And I landed this job with this Japanese man who was the president of a small oil and gas corporation in downtown Vancouver. And I went in and met him. And I shook his hand and I looked him in the eye and got through the interview. And he hired me as his executive assistant. And then when I was doing that and loving it, and I was, you know, earning enough to live on my own, which was fantastic. And then, but now I'm still at the, I have to tell you the English Bay apartment hotel story. So I'm getting the bus to work, and I'm sitting out at the bench of this hotel waiting for the bus. And all these people going to work, all these guys in their cars, are blowing the horn and waving at me. And I'm waving at them. I think, wow, what a friendly city. And then a few weeks later, I'm getting into a cab, and I said, English Bay Apartment Hotel, please. And he said, oh, you're a working girl. I am. I said, yes, I am. I said, I just got a job. I'm working for Hymac Resources. And he said, oh, he said, no. He said, that's not the, he laughed. He said, where are you from? I said, I'm from Nova Scotia. And he said, oh. He said, that explains it. He said, you know the hotel that you stay in, he said, that's frequented by prostitutes.
Oh, I said, my.
Oh, man, that explains why all these guys are waving at me while I'm waiting for the bus.
So now I have to know what happened after that.
I got an apartment. I met some people. It was just a great couple of years. That's where I just, you know, lovingly look back at that time to say that's where I sowed my oats. And then while I had that job, as luck would have it, I was answering his phone, screening his calls for him, and he was getting a lot of calls from stockbrokers. And this one stockbroker used to call regularly, and he said, I just love your voice. And I said, thank you so much. And he said, have you ever thought of going into radio? And I said, well, it's funny you should say that, because I really wanted to go to university to study journalism, but that just got derailed, so here I am in Vancouver. But yes, I would love to one day pursue that. And he said, well, I have a business report that I need produced, and I think you would be perfect for it. So he said, go over and see my buddy at Sea Isle Radio and tell him I want you to do my business show. And that's how I got my start in radio.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that was absolutely fantastic. Wow.
Yep, just one guy who called and liked my voice. Yep.
What were the odds on that one happening, right?
I know.
Yeah.
Tell me that destiny was not at work there, I know.
Absolutely, because it wasn't in that English Bay apartment area, no.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
So, Tanya, if you
friendly
could...
city.
Yeah, apparently. What's one thing you wish you would have known when you were younger?
Oh, my gosh, where to start there? Holy mackerel.
Loaded question,
It sure is. But I think what I really wish I had known when I was younger is how important it is to treat myself like I treat my best friends. Because, I mean, really, learning to love ourselves, I think, is one of the hardest things that we'll do in life.
Right.
Because of all that programming, right? We're programmed from the time we're born to feel inferior, and we're bombarded with all those messages that we're never enough. We're never smart enough. We're never rich enough. We're never attractive enough. We're never hairless enough.
And for
we're definitely
women,
never slim enough.
And
right?
for girls, we're always put there to serve somebody else. To serve a need, to nurture, to do something else for someone else. It's never, you know, we're never on, I always say I was never on the list, let alone
there
down on the list. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's a great thing.
Absolutely.
So how did you manage to, what did you do to make that happen for yourself?
Well, I think I knew for a long time, and talk about the social pressure for women, right, to be mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew early on in my life that I was not mother material, because I think parenting is the most difficult job that you have in a lifetime next to loving yourself. Parenting is next. I think parenting is before that, actually. And I just never felt up to the job. I just knew I would not make a good parent. And when you feel as a woman that you're really, your only purpose in life is to procreate, that really puts you in a place of disadvantage. And it was for me for a long time. I was made to feel inadequate for not wanting to be a mother. Now, that's not to say I'm not maternal. I'm very maternal with my nephew. I love him like he's my own son. I love my sister like a daughter because I helped to raise her. And maybe that influence probably had the effect on me that I didn't want the responsibility of parenting. I had it when I was very young.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that going through my youth with those messages that I was kind of unworthy because I didn't want to be a mother, and I felt kind of devalued because I knew that wasn't in the cards for me. And I thought, well, you know, if you're not a mother, then why are you even here?
Yeah.
So when it came down to really learning to love myself, I had to learn to define what it is I wanted, to nurture myself, to put my needs first, and to nurture my talents and my dreams, to live a fulfilling life without feeling selfish. Because, you know, you as a woman doing that and not wanting to be a mother, I was called selfish a lot.
Yeah, I can
imagine. And I needed to transcend that to self-care. I was caring for myself because I hadn't been cared for as a child by my mother, right? So that certainly had an effect on me as well.
Right. So in a lot of cases, it's because you don't know how to nurture because you weren't given that from a mother figure that
right.
You know, sometimes
causes
conflict,
have the example.
Right?
Yeah,
for sure.
So I think we all definitely have a specific purpose in life, and the sooner we can find that, the more fulfilling our life is. So for me, that journey began fairly early as a teenager because all of my friends were talking about how they couldn't wait to be married and be a mother, and that I knew that was not what I wanted. So you need to know what you want and not be pushed by the social constructs, that social conditioning that tells you what you're expected to do. Mm-hmm. Do what you want to do, not what you're expected to do.
Well, that's absolutely true. And I mean, know what you want, but know also what you don't want is very key too. Like you're saying, you didn't want to be a mother. You didn't want to go that route. So that's good to know. So how did you find out how did you transition into learning to treat yourself as your best friend? How did that come about to play for you?
Well, I think it was a process. You know, it's a trial and error process. I remember being very young and entrepreneurial, and it was unusual at that point for young women to be entrepreneurial, and that came with certain challenges as well, because when I was in my 20s, I was dealing with mostly all men in that world, and that certainly presented challenges for me as a young woman as well.
Mm-hmm.
About, you know, well, I remember when I was getting married. Okay, so case in point, let's talk about when I got married. I didn't get married until I was 30. And the man I married had been divorced for 2 years, and he had 3 children on another continent.
Oh,
so
that's interesting.
By the time he met me, he had been divorced for 2 years. So it's not like I was a homewrecker or anything. Mm-hmm. But when he went back and told his parents that he was getting remarried, they were shocked because he swore he would never get married again. But, you know, we fell in love and we knew that we were destined to be together. And they said, and here are the questions that were asked by his parents. How old is she? 30. Has she ever been married? No. Does she have any children? No. What does she do? She runs her own business. Well, what's wrong with her? How come she's never been married?
Yes, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So that's the social conditioning. That's that social construct that women are forced into, right? Because you're made to feel like there's something wrong with you if you're not married by the time you're 30.
Yeah, that's so true. It was really bad for that
point
in time.
It is. It still is.
And still is. Yeah, exactly.
Still is.
And I think it's just the age thermometer has changed slightly, because back in our parents' ages, if you were 25, oh my goodness, and you weren't married, you were an old maid. So, you know, in our generation, it was 30, and now, I don't know what it is now, but it's not a healthy parameter to put on people. It doesn't do us
any
justice.
It is definitely not.
No, it doesn't serve a purpose either.
And I started to tell you about that quote. I don't want to forget the quote by Denzel Washington,
yes.
And then I got off on another tangent, which I tend to do. So try to keep me on track, Teresa.
That's okay. I was going to ask you about that.
Denzel Washington said, sure, if you don't read a newspaper, then perhaps, yes, you might be uninformed. However, if you do read a newspaper, you are 100% misinformed.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't that something?
So
that
I love that quote. And I use it all the time because the agenda of mainstream media, there's always an agenda, and it's always tied to corporations and money.
Mm-hmm.
And you they will tell you what they need you to know.
Yeah, and they're slammed, I think.
Exactly.
In a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm.
And, you
always.
Know, I think we've talked about this, you and I, before, how I personally don't read newspapers. I don't listen to the news. I don't watch TV, you know, normal, like, well, average TV, cable, and all that sort of thing. So I don't subscribe to any of that stuff. And I hear highlights of news from my husband and from my in-laws and whoever, you know, feels like they want to share something with me. But for mm-hmm. a person who has, like I have, after a massive car accident, post-traumatic stress, hearing all that news and the negativity and the horrific things that go on, it triggers.
Yeah.
And
why do you want to carry that on your shoulders all day?
It has no
relevance to your life whatsoever. None whatsoever.
Absolutely. It's not going to make a difference mm-hmm. in who I am personally or what I do or what I, you know, how I act or anything like that. That's just another burden that's heaped onto my shoulders that I really didn't ask for and don't want.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So be the gatekeeper of your mind. Just be aware of that manipulation from mainstream media to mm-hmm. program you to be consumers, right? I mean, that's what it's all about. The size of our homes in the last 50 years has doubled, Teresa. And we've created a multi-billion-dollar storage industry in the last 50 years. And all of my friends, I stopped getting invited to dinner, actually, because when I get to their house in their double-car garage and their two cars are parked outside, I bring it up and I say, why are your two cars parked outside when you've got a double-car garage? Well, because they've got so much shit inside their garage they can't fit the cars in anymore, right?
Oh, my goodness, yeah. Isn't that something?
So
I know. Yeah, we need to
clean it. We've become so materialistic and so consumer-driven that, you know, we're ruining our planet. And we have just brought on all this stress to our lives. People are now living off lines of credit, paying 19.99% on credit cards that they're still putting stuff on and just barely making minimum payments to keep everything afloat.
Yeah.
And living under this enormous amount of stress every day. And that's where all the chronic illness is coming from. 90% of chronic illness is coming from stress.
Oh, my goodness. And I think that's why a lot of us feel stuck in what
mm-hmm.
in the mire or the mud or whatever you want to call it of our lives. And we just feel like we can't crawl out of it at all.
Well, we can. It's just a choice. You need to make the choice. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what mm-hmm. advice would you give someone who feels stuck in their life, Tanya?
I would say to define what it is that you want. Well, define what's wrong. What is it that you don't like? Because it's easier to define what you do want when you can define what you don't like about your life. So I always encourage people to do a clarity contrast exercise. Just take a blank piece of paper, draw a line down the middle, and on one side, say, this is what I hate about my life. And then once you get everything down that you don't like about your life, on the new column on the right-hand side, do the opposite to what that is. So, you know, for instance, when I was deciding what I didn't like about my life when I was in my 20s and how I intended to manifest a life partner that I could grow my life with and be fulfilled with, I was dating a lot of guys who were jerks. So, you know, on one side of the page, you know, I want to stop attracting all these jerks to my life. And on the right side of the page is, well, what do I want? I want to attract someone who adores me and will treat me well and is, you know, funny and intelligent and all of those great characteristics that you're looking for in a relationship. I talk to a lot of women, Teresa, who are staying in relationships that they've been in for 10 or 15 years because they're stuck financially
mm-hmm.
and they're just frozen in fear. How can I leave? I can't afford to live alone. That's bullshit. You can afford to live alone. Go rent a room from an old lady who's living alone and lonely and trying to pay her mortgage or whatever
mm-hmm.
and rent a room.
There are ways.
Yeah, you can do it. Make the choice.
Yeah,
stop
I was stuck in that
excuses for being unhappy.
Yeah, exactly. I was stuck in that for 23 years, as you know, from reading my book, and I didn't think I could find a way out. And then all of a sudden, I woke up and felt like I was dead inside.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was my deciding factor. I was dead, and I had to find a way out. Now, not everyone has to go to that extreme, but I like what mm-hmm. you say about doing the pros and cons or the balance sheet of our lives and find out what's working
Absolutely.
And what's not working. And then look for some help. Look for some guidance. I think it's really key.
There's all kinds of guidance.
Yeah.
And you know what, Teresa? Once you put it down in writing and you make that decision and say, this is what I want and this is what I intend to manifest in my life, I'm not kidding you. Miracles happen.
It is so many things.
It totally is. It's
yeah.
there. It's a law of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I prove it every day.
You do, and I've been watching you for a while, and we've been chatting for a while, and I've been just amazed and just happy for you, what you've been able to accomplish, what you've done. And I know you have something else you've just accomplished. Would you like to share it with us?
Oh, yes. I've just finally published my book in honor of my father. And my father was a single dad in the 60s, quite an anomaly for the time, and he was bringing up myself and my baby sister, which is why I helped to raise her. So she's very much like a daughter to me. She jokingly calls me Smother. Sister, mother, Smother.
Oh, that's
yes,
cute.
Mother. And he was just a remarkable man. You know, I mean, there was no parenting book other, I think, than maybe Dr. Spock available in the 60s, and he probably referred to that. But he was a very well-read man. He loved reading philosophy, and he used to basically give me a line of philosophy. Anytime I went to him with a problem, he would spit out this line of philosophy, hoping that it would solve everything. I'll just give you a quick example. When I was about 9, I was being bullied at school, and I came home and I said, Daddy, why are those girls being so mean to me? And between sobs, he said, oh, sweetheart, don't worry. The mills of the gods grind slowly but exceedingly fine.
Oh, no, that's
what? So, you know, that sentiment was lost on me as a 9-year-old, but it's certainly something that stuck with me for the rest of my life, right? I mean, the other way to say it is what goes around comes around, right? But
yes.
And so I lovingly and jokingly grew to call him Philosopher Dad.
Hmm.
So over the years, I used to save his quotes. And I said, oh, I got to get this book done, because he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 2005. And then my husband and I ended up being going to Spain for 4 years. And I thought, oh, I got to get this book done in honor of him so we can celebrate it while he's still here. And that didn't happen because I kept procrastinating. So finally, 10 years later, Teresa, it is done. And it's called Mindful Wisdom from My Philosopher Dad, Sage Advice from a Single Father.
Oh, that's beautiful. And so many congratulations to you for doing that. I know your dad.
Thank you.
I'm sure your dad would be so pleased and so honored. That's such a beautiful gift to leave, not only for your dad, but the rest of the world.
Thank you. I think, I'm proud of it. It's kind of a bit of a biography, just to give people a little bit of why I wrote the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tribute to him, but it's really a self-help book. It's what, you know, I share what I went through and how I came through life and how I continue to go through life, loving myself and being proud of that instead of being small. You don't serve anyone by being small in the world. You need to, what did Wayne Dyer used to say, don't die with the music still in you.
Yeah, very true. And I mean, we need to just live to our fullest potential. And
absolutely.
That's what it's all about.
Fast.
Yeah. So when is the book being published, or has it been?
It just actually went back to the printer today. We had to get two proofs because there were a couple of pages out of alignment, and I had to switch up a picture that came to me actually through a meditation, because my dad talks to me all the time in my meditations. So my last meditation, I said, yes, I will do that. So we had to do a last-minute change. I had hoped to have it by Christmas, but it looks like it's going to be celebrating the new year for me now.
Well, that's a great way to break into 2019. I think that's fantastic.
I think so.
Yeah. And we will be sharing, if you send me the link for the book on Amazon or wherever it's going to be for sale.
Absolutely.
We'll share
yes,
it on
it
the website.
Be.
It'll be on my website and plus Divas That Care Network, the Divas That Care website as well. So, Tanya, thank you. Do you have a favorite saying or quote you would like to leave our listeners today?
Oh, my gosh. Worry is the interest you pay on a debt that never comes due.
Oh, that's interesting. Did that come from your dad?
Yes, it did.
That is fantastic. I think that's a great one. And Tanya, thank you so much for spending time with us today. This has just been a lovely conversation. And I know we need to do this again because we have so many topics
yes.
we're going to cover.
I would love to do that, Teresa. And can we give Reiki a little plug here? Reiki Chopra is the one. You can find her on Facebook, and it's Empower Your Curves. So she's the designer she's a fashion designer designing for your curves.
Oh, that's
embrace
perfect.
Your voluptuousness, yes. Good. So
that's
get in
perfect.
Touch with Reiki Chopra, and
well, I think
she will fix you up.
I think what I'll do is I'll connect with her through email or message, and I'll ask for her permission and then put her website or something up on the...
That would be awesome.
Yeah. I think
I'd love,
that.
The more people... Yeah,
that's fantastic. Well, and Tanya, tell us how our listeners can get in touch with you.
Well, I would love if you download my Mindfulness Manifesto. So in this Mindfulness Manifesto, you will learn how to make peace with your stress, and it will give you an abundance of resources so you can wean yourself away from all the negativity that you're exposed to on a daily basis, and it will give you strategic ideas, actionable items for you to actually start making peace with your stress and living a fulfilled life, a balanced and fulfilled life. And you can get that at www.gottalovelove.com. That's G-O-T-T-A, love.com.
Oh, I like that. I love that, actually. I think that no one's going to forget that. I think that's fantastic. So, again, we'll have all of your website and your Facebook addresses, your LinkedIn, your Twitter handles. Everything will be put up on the Divas That Care website with your interview. And thank you again so much. And I wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas. And thank you, Tanya, for being with us today.
Thank you, Teresa. This has been amazing. Thanks so much for the work you do. And Merry Christmas to you, too.
You're very welcome. So, Divas, that brings to close another great interview with Tanya McIntyre. So thank you, Tanya, for sharing your thoughts and wisdoms with our listeners today. And, Divas, if you would like to connect with Tanya, all of her information will be listed under her interview at www.divasthatcare.com. You go to that website and you click on my picture, that's Teresa Sims, and there you'll find Tanya's interview and all the interviews that we've done in the past. So all of Tanya's information will be there. If you have any questions, please reach out to her. I know she will be happy to share any information with you. So once again, thank you for listening to Powering Through Life.